Working Cows Podcast, episode 237.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. This is Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network. And this episode is brought to you by Kubota. Together, we do more. Ranching demands well-built equipment. Kubota equipment that's built right, built ready, and proven for over a century. Tractors that are adaptable and versatile. Hay tools backed by a two-year warranty. Sidekick utility vehicles where durability meets speed. And productive SSV skid steers. There's ranch work to do. Kubota equipment is ready to get it done right. Learn more at KubotaUSA.com. Very excited to be joined today by Shane Barber. Shane is a guy that I've gotten to know just through some Craigslist transactions, actually, and walked into his place one day and ended up spending some time just learning about him from grazing, something he'd been doing for a while. And he had a really unique perspective, really appreciated what he had to say that day, and have wanted to get him back on since then. And took me a while to get there, but you'll be interested in a lot of what Shane is doing from a professional side and his perspective on grazing. So make sure you check out the show notes page for today and find links to the waterers that Shane sells, as well as some of the other things that he's got going on. Have posted a Facebook video of his over the years. I posted a Facebook video of him and I talking about the waterers that he makes and some of those things, but be sure to check that out in the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/237. We're going to talk to Shane today about people-first grazing and just a unique perspective about how to keep the people first in our grazing and make sure that we're taking care of humans on our operation, as well as the underground livestock, the above ground livestock, all those things. But really, it's team people grazing, or people first grazing is what we're talking about today with Shane. And I'm really excited for you to hear his perspective on these things. Shane, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks, Clay.
Really, you know, I would say by God's providence, we connected one day. Your family, I think maybe a brother-in-law, was selling some panels on Craigslist, and I was in need of some panels. And so I drove down to your neck of the woods and picked them up, and your dad met me there and said, "Here's the panels. Are you interested?" "Yep." "Well, my son Shane will help you load them." And then I think you and I spent the next hour and a half or 2 hours talking about grazing. And you really had some helpful perspectives for me, especially where I was just getting started, and some things that I probably should have listened to a little bit more intently, honestly, as you said them. We have to make our own mistakes to learn our own lessons sometimes, which is a foolish way to do it, but sometimes that's the way it happens. And so I've learned some of those lessons that you were trying to teach me that day. And now I believe them even more. So I invited you on to talk today about what I've come to call people first grazing. What do you think about when you hear that phrase, people first grazing? Or would you think that's a helpful way to think about it?
Well, that Clay, I do remember that day now as you put the pieces together, and so it makes me smile to think about those conversations, and then to think of again the providence of connecting together. So with a smile on my face, I put that memory together, and then think about your question there of people first grazing. What comes to my mind as I think about the word grazing, or actually when I try to address almost anything, is a holistic approach to what you're doing. I feel that human beings, predominantly when they go to make choices, they get super focused on the task or the solution, And so because of that, then we have a tendency to remove other factors. And so as I think about you saying people first grazing, it sounds like a contradiction, perhaps to many people, but to keep in mind in the equation, in the calculation of what you're doing, to realize that there's always bigger priorities. There's always greater goals than maybe the smaller goal that you're trying to address on your ranch, for your finances, for your business, whatever. So if people don't fit into your calculation, I would say that you're coming short. You're falling very short. And so it has to be in the background or as part of the overarching theme of what you're trying to accomplish, or else, unfortunately, 1 year, 2 years, 20 years down the road, in the midst of your quote unquote success, you may have missed the bigger picture and what I think you would agree is the more important picture as we walk through this life.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think that we oftentimes, and I've been there, you know, even hosted a discussion between two guys and said, you know, the discussion ended up being, you know, the discussion between moving once a day and moving 10 times a day. And both of those have their place, honestly. I think they really do. And different pieces of land at different times of in that land's life cycle needs a different approach to its grazing. And so having those tools on our tool belt are helpful, right? I mean, to keep a variety of tools on our tool belt so that when we come to a certain job, we've got the tool to do that, but we're not only ever using that tool, right? For everything that we're facing. So can you talk to me about some of the ways that you think about the relationship between a well-executed grazing plan and managing people?
One of the factors that as we talk about this is let's keep in mind, with an engineering background, I always think of graphs or I think of numbers, but when we start to put together a grazing plan, to realize that when you start to move cattle faster than once every 2 days, okay? So when we get a grazing plan that we're somewhere in the neighborhood of every 5 to 10 days, or like maybe once a week, or somewhere, you know, 3 to 4 days. So all that seems to flow in, I would say, kind of a linear relationship in terms of the amount of work that you're doing. And then when you get to shorter than 2 days, there is a big, it's not even exponential in terms of if I think of a graph, it's a jump in terms of people management and like a crisis environment in terms of your time and your ability to respond and your decision making. So that to me is a big part of keeping the people as part of as this equation. So just putting that in the background, kind of the math of what we're talking about. So you can kind of sit with a piece of paper and you can plan out your grazing plan and you can do all this really good. And you can say, well, this year I'm going to move to, like, we're going to move every day, where in the past that you've moved, say, on average, every 3 days. Well, you haven't like tripled the number of moves. You have tripled the number of moves, but you've more than tripled. I mean, you have nearly exponentially increased the crisis factor or the management speed that's required. So now all of a sudden the people element becomes much more intense. Now we're talking about something where we have a much higher level of emotions, a much higher level of timely action required, much higher level of stress, et cetera. So just kind of throwing that in the background of the calculation, realizing that would be where I would say the cutoff is when you decide, you know, make a management decision and decide that we're going to go faster than 2 days. So just keeping that as, as a backdrop. And then realizing that on the people side, I think in agriculture, we're kind of used to that. Sometimes we're kind of used to that crisis management. We're used to that. Whatever it takes to get the job done, we'll just do it because that's who we are. You know, we're ag people. We work from daylight to till we can figure out a better way to turn the lights on kind of time frame. Which is not, you have to realize that's normal for ag people. That is not normal in humanity, and never has been, by the way, when you think about it. It's, I mean, throughout history, God didn't build us with a headlamp.
Right.
But you know, in ag, we really invest in lights. So that's one big factor to keep in mind is how badly do you want to test the breaking point of the human beings around you for the sake of your grazing plan? You know, like to ask yourself that question beforehand, because we know what the answer is. At least I think we always know what the answer is in the midst of it. It's like, whatever we'll do. I mean, this is a war out here. So we're going to get it done. We are going to, you know, we're going to make it happen. And so at the end of the season, the end of the week, the end of the relationship, whether it be your marriage relationship or your kids or your work coworkers or whatever, have you sacrificed that for your wonderful grazing plan? So talking around it a little bit, but I don't know if that helps trying to get a flavor perspective. But again, coming back to one big step is if grazers are going to say, hey, we're excited about this, so now I'm going to step it up a notch. Realize there is notches that you step up to that create a dramatically larger workload than other steps.
Yeah. No, it's just given the number of notes I wrote down while you were talking, it was very helpful. So thank you. I really appreciated a lot of that. And I'm taking notes as you're talking, and we're going to come back around to a lot of these things. But one of the things that you said just then that I think I felt, you know, I mean, you and your daughter took the time to drive up early one morning to our house and walk through our field with us and look at some of the things. And you talked me through some of the ways that you would approach that piece of land that we had. And I was, you know, I did take some of that advice, honestly. You said, you know, as far as this alfalfa and crested wheat, I had 13 acres of alfalfa and crested wheat. You said I would either take the fence down and let them have that and the stuff next to it so that you get a longer burn on that rather than just giving them the 13 acres a little bit at a time and secluding them to that, because by the time their rumen gets switched over, they'll be getting some good out of it, but then they'll be done with it and they'll crash again on you. So, but actually that wasn't the piece of advice that you gave me. You said I would try to capture those nutrients at their peak value. So I had my neighbors come in and put them in windrows at the end of June. And then we grazed them from October to January with just our own cows and sheep. So, that was the advice that you gave that I did take. So, but I mean, you came out and you helped us, and some of the things that you were saying then, the advice I didn't take was probably moving more often than every other day. And one of the things that you just said when you were talking was talking about the pressure that puts on people. You didn't use that word pressure, but that's mm-hmm. essentially what it is that you've got that pressure of, oh, the cows need move too, on top of everything else that we've got to do today, on top of that leak mm-hmm. I've got to fix and that broken wire I've got to fix and, you know, this and that and everything else on the to-do list, the cows need move today too. And so that becomes a pressure, and that pressure, if we're not attuned to it, can become a source of conflict within the people that are connected to the business. Is that kind of go yeah. along with your experience?
Yeah, I think that word, you know, whatever word we can use to help your listeners, to help us in the community of grazers, to try to understand if they haven't been there. To again, I think you've alluded to the fact that you've perhaps started to experience some mistakes. You know, acquire some wisdom through mistakes. That's basically what I'm about. The sum of my wisdom is the mistakes that I've made. So that pressure is something that I want to say is because of the math of moving quickly. It's a choice beforehand. You know, it's a choice. If you're actually in the planning stage and you've decided to move that quickly, then you are self-inflicting a lot of for your word, a lot of pressure on your own system, on your own workforce. And if I can, you know, if I can try to unpack that a little bit, what that's about is the fact that 48 hours between moves means that if you missed your calculations by 25%, well, then that means that we have to move, you know, like you, now you have to move in one day instead of two. And so that's now all of a sudden, okay, well, that means you thought that they were going to be there for 2 days, and now you need to move them in one. Well, that kind of throws a kink in your schedule because you completely missed that. So now you have this hurry up. Well, I got to move it. I've got to prepare the next paddock. And so you're hustling around. And then on top of that, you're typically seeing variations in your cattle's nutrition cycle because they're starting to get hungry a little faster than you had hoped, or you're switching nutrition on them a little faster or a little later. And then the next day, in the midst of your calculations, then it doesn't look like they're hungry. And so you're balancing too many variables on too short of a timeline. Weather, cattle nutrition, I'm going to call it cattle hungriness. Somebody else got a lot better term, but it changes, you know, based on if a storm's coming up, then we all know just sort of anecdotally, but it happens. Those cattle are really trying to fill up. So they're consuming a lot of feed, and you're interpreting that a little different. If cattle move from a paddock hungry or well-fed, that changes your calculations. So about the time you have it figured out, something will just switch on you, and then you'll start the cycle into more, you know, more uneasiness and adding more pressure to that cycle until something has to give. And that maybe means you break your grazing plan, or you know, have to switch things up. And again, adding some more chaos because you can't go as planned. So just unpacking that a little bit. But yeah, in agreement there, that pressure is a great word to say. And it normally lands on the people who are doing the work or the management. Yeah, exactly. 100%.
But if they're not, if the people doing the work aren't handling the pressure well, then the people that they are connected to, whether they be at home or the other people that they are working with in the business, will feel that pressure as well, right? I mean, that's another, I mean, kind of these, I think as understanding ag would say, the cascading and compounding effects, right? There's more than just the first order of people that are affected by these things. There's ripple effects that go beyond just that first person who feels the pressure of, oh yeah, the cows need moved today as well.
Well, yeah, that's the, to me, that's obvious, in discussion, but we're blinded to it in the heat of, I'll call it the battle, because it seems like when you're in the midst of that, it's just literally a war. And there's maybe other people experience it differently, but there gets to be a lot of adrenaline, a lot of, you know, hurrying, a lot of anxiousness, and then also a lot of, you know, sort of in a feedback loop of whoever's doing the work, they get done, get home, get finished up, and it's like there's this success because you just finished putting out the fire. You just finished winning that little battle. You finished that. So now you're going up and down emotionally, or the labor force is going up and down emotionally because of something that you've accomplished, and you forget that there's this group of people around you, whether it be spouses, kids, whatever, everything else that is going on in their life, you know, whether or not they're involved with you. You haven't even noticed what's going on. You're absolutely, you've got tunnel vision, you're oblivious to that. And so those relationships are going to suffer. You're not able to contribute to those relationships. You're not able to contribute to the, even if it's just people that are working or that you're wanting to mentor, whether it be employees or other people, you're not pouring into those people at all because you're in the midst of solving this amazing crisis that ultimately a while back you made decisions to bring it on yourself.
This conversation brings to mind Troy Bishop, who I think uses the term linger grazing, that we want to take the time. And I'll link to his episode today. The show notes page for today is workingcows.net/237, workingcows.net/237. And I'll link to his episode there. And his episode was episode 195. But he talks kind of around these same kind of things, but just kind of that slower approach to grazing, less rushed, less hurried approach to grazing. And, you know, I mean, in the stockmanship world, one of the best things that I've ever heard with regard to stockmanship came from my wife, who is the best stockman on my place, or stockwoman on my place. She said, you know, we've got all day to get this done. And, you know, that's the you've got to approach. If you want to approach stockmanship well, I think you've got to approach it with that mindset every single time you go out to work cattle. We've got all day to get this done. and otherwise there's that pressure again. And then people yell and things get thrown. And at least in my experience. So.
And I really like that. And the reason why I like that is, honestly, what you're describing is the difference in approach, which makes or breaks the people side of it. If you as a person, let's say you're the manager or the planner, if you're a person that's really high strung, and when things start to get out of balance, when things aren't matching up to the plan, or if things are starting to get a little late, whatever the case is, if you're not able to stay calm and adapt, then realize that there's elements to what I call intensive grazing, or we're going to say, you know, higher speed movements of cattle management that you might not be a good fit for. You know, you need to really look at yourself and say, if that's sure, this is a wonderful plan on paper or on seminar or on what you're learning, but you might not be the person to be managing that role of it. You just described your wife being someone that has an opinion or approach or a mentality that I believe really fits well in terms of how to move the cattle. Because if you don't have someone who's leading that can say this is reality right here, this is truly reality. Other people might look at it and say, we got to get this done. If this doesn't happen in a certain amount of time, then, you know, the sky is going to fall. And there's other things, and they're raising the pressure level on the people around you. That's not going to work for anybody long term. It's just not going to work. But the difference is, honestly, it's just attitude, mentality, and ultimately management approach when it comes to those day-to-day moves.
Yeah. And again, to borrow from Understanding Ag, you know, we talked about compounding and cascading effects. They also talk about, they've added the fifth principle of soil, or the sixth principle of soil health, to the five that we've been hearing about for probably a decade or more. I don't know. But anyways, their sixth principle of soil health is context. Like, what is your context? Who are you? What are you good at? What's the history of the land that you're managing? You know, I mean, knowing what I know now, I shouldn't have touched the east end of my place for 3 years. You know, understanding how that land reacted to grazing the first time and a lot of those things, I shouldn't have touched it for 3 years because it had been hayed every year, probably since the first double nine mower and rake came home from the implement dealership. And it just was totally played out. It needed rest and it needed a lot of it. And we've gone into 2 years of drought since the, you know, the first year I showed up to that place, we had 40 inches of moisture, and now we've had 9 in back-to-back years. And so, of course, I didn't know the drought was coming, but still, we needed that place needed that rest, even if we were going to get our average of 15 inches of moisture. So, but I thought it was a cash flow crunch. We needed to try and prove all of these ideas that we'd been learning that they worked. And they did, honestly. I mean, the cows took the top third of every plant. They did a lot of the things that I thought they would, but at what expense, right, of people and land? And I think the animal performance was pretty stellar, but people and land probably suffered some days. I know they suffered some days because of it, but
yeah. Yeah, I think that the context, at least in terms of the people side, what I gravitate towards is management that can properly interpret context. You know, we can answer easy questions when the questions are asked. You know, how long should I graze this? What kind of cattle should I use? How large should the herd should be? What size of the paddock should we have? These are simple questions in terms of they have answers to them when you frame them up that way. But to be able to actually interpret context, multiple contexts, is something that I gravitate towards in terms of looking to someone who can actually manage or make decisions about an operation. Someone that can see not just one context, but two, three, or four, and that's you know, gathering back to your idea of people in the grazing system. Can you actually interpret your workforce, the future of your workforce, your family, how they relate to the operation? I assume most of the time that's a big part of any grazing operation is your family that way. And can you maybe you have a 10-year grazing plan, but can you see how the relationships of people play into that in 10 years? Or did you make that plan in a vacuum of the of the people, you know, if it makes sense? So as you think of context, I think of adding, not, you know, like what context can you accurately add to your operation, and do you have any metrics as to how those different elements are doing as you shape your management plan?
Yeah. Yeah. Shane, was this way of thinking a revelation to you? Was it, I mean, you've talked about learning by mistakes, gaining wisdom through mistakes. Was this way of thinking a revelation to you, or was it something that you learned by mistakes, or how did you land here? How'd you get here?
I don't know if this is, you know, fair or not fair in terms of saying that I get overwhelmed with the big picture all the time. Like I typically have too many components to add into the equation to, you know, in terms of, you know, making decisions. So I like to try to find out what all the variables are and try to calculate them. But I like to have more than just a simple, how big should the pasture be, you know, or how many cows should we run? I like to try to pull as much of the information in. And that's the way I think. In asking the question, it almost assumes that the person you're asking the question to is somehow become good at the answers. And so I don't want to confirm that reality. I think we all grow and we all change, and we've realized what we've done right and what we've failed at, you know, where we said, well, we shouldn't have done it that way again. So to answer the question, learn a lot from mistakes, learned a lot from trying some. I think we have to be really, really honest about what was a mistake, and then burn that back into our conscience and say, okay, yeah, let's not do that again, but we're learning. And then if you can be wise about looking at others. I don't know how we actually grow enough to say, hey, there's somebody that's made some mistakes. I need to grow from their mistakes and take that information and do it without being so proud that we're going to try it our own way. That's a really, really big one. But I will say that in terms of people, managing people in terms from an employee standpoint And then the other side is integrating the people in your family, in your relationships, into, you know, into how that ties into your overall plan. Those to me are two separate things. And I don't know that I've become skillful on the latter, which is to say that, yeah, I've was able to really integrate, you know, my kids and my family into the grazing aspect, you know, like long-term, you know. And I see the same with other folks as well. It's like, yeah, we can put this idea together short-term, but have we actually been able to, you know, sacrifice, or not sacrifice, our relationships and our family and so forth, simultaneously? You know, we've been able to say that, hey, we're really growing in terms of a family. We're growing in terms of the way we work together. We're growing in terms of our knowledge base and so forth. And so I applaud those people that are able to do that and can say, no, we enjoy our relationships, better because of the steps we're taking on the ranch. And we are, you know, those are things that have improved because of what we do on the ranch and decisions that we've made. I don't know if that answers that, but again, I don't give myself a report card as high as maybe it might assume, but, you know, I think big picture holistically, and I want to encourage people that are listening to ask yourself, if you do that, if you do not do that, then get someone around you that does, gather wisdom from them, and recognize where you land. I honestly don't believe that you can change that just by saying, I need to start doing that. I think some people think more holistically, more big picture, and other people think more tactically. And I think, each person needs the other people around on their team to be effective. But if you don't have a holistic, person in your group, try to get one. Get some who's, you know, going to share some wisdom in the bigger picture.
So early on in that, you said that you are constantly overwhelmed by the big picture. Is that right? Did I hear that right?
I don't. It's just a picture that I see. I said the word overwhelmed because I want to share, compared to the majority of normal people, the majority of good people, good normal people who can approach their day and their operation in very effective ways, to realize that there's peculiar people on this planet, and I'm going to say I'm that, maybe say weird people, however it says, that they see a lot of different variables coming in, and they adjust to those variables, and they don't put their earbuds in and tune it out so that they can address the task at hand. Does that make sense by way of comparison?
Yeah.
Constantly taking in new information, adapting to the decision that was just made, and working with that decision, and then gathering new information until a different decision needs to be made. Taking in factors like finances, schedules, weather, markets, all these things that certainly, should be an overwhelming amount of information for normal people to be calculating upon. And so that's where I'm typically there in that, like, lots of information, trying to be at that navigation spot for the whole operation. And so that definitely, I would say that definitely seems overwhelming for a normal person. But it's the place that I enjoy, and I feel like I thrive, and I don't feel like I'm paralyzed because I still can make a decision. But I would also say that it's not the kind of person that can effectively go out there and build 2 miles of fence and get it done very, very efficiently, nail it, get the job done, and come back and report for more work. That this particular person won't do that well. Will not do that very well.
Sure. So here's like my tendency is to see the big picture. and mm-hmm. to cast a vision to people about my big picture vision, the world I see or the event I see. And I mean, you and I were just together at a men's event where I had, you know, in 5 minutes, I had the whole night outlined and a vision for it. But when it came to the Monday before the event and I got a call from a lady in the church wanting to help with food, she said, what are we doing? What are you looking for food? I said, well, it's a guy's event. Let's do meat and potatoes. And we've got the meat covered. So if you want to bring the potatoes, that'd be great. She said, what about a salad and a dessert? And I said, well, I haven't thought about it. And like, that's just the way my mind works is I see the picture. I see the future. I see the vision. I don't see the details. Right. And so I think that that's where I'm going with this line of questioning is trying to determine if it's your engineering mindset that allows you to see the details and to take the information in and to make a decision from those details. Whereas I'm constantly surprised by the details that I've missed.
those are two different personality types. You know, I believe that's kind of the way I break them down.
Yep.
And, I think of it more as, you know, tactically versus logistically, I'm sorry, those two terms actually are somewhat interchangeable, but, I would say that, I guess that the part that I see in ag most of the time is that the folks in ag are very, very gifted at getting the details done. Mm. And they may not think of themselves as detail oriented as you mentioned, being able to remember the dessert. But they are, they're detailed oriented in terms of they're focusing on equipment. They're focusing on fence posts. They're focusing on, the specific items that are needed for the next task to take place. And so I think the general ag community does a really good job of that. Like they do, at least that's my perception. And I also feel like, that more people, let's say at least 75% of the population is geared towards that. And it's good because if they weren't geared like that, we literally would all starve to death. Like that is what is needed. Somebody has to go out there and physically do the task, gather the item, and then use that item to do it. So that is really, really important. My personal approach is, I think it's similar to yours, in terms of what you're describing, is that I want to make sure that we are heading in the right direction, given all the variables that are currently upon us. And so those are kind of things that burden myself. And I feel, you know, at least from my perspective, I also feel like that's where the challenge in holistic management or a change in the operation, the real challenge is that we're often asking managers, often ranchers that are now having to convert into managers. Probably the challenge here is that we're asking ranchers, hey, why don't you get into what used to be a very common term, management intensive grazing? Why don't you move this direction? It's really going to add to your profitability. It's the way you need to do. Now we need to address things like soil health. We need to address things like what we're discussing right now is that, you know, how to, you know, more effectively not miss out on the people, the relationships, just all kinds of other variables that are coming into the idea of managing your ranch. And I believe there are situations where we're asking those individuals to engage a way of thinking that they perhaps might not be gifted towards, that they really are going to have to ask for a lot of help, or they might have to raise their hand and say, you know what, I don't know if I'm up to this, because this is way bigger than what we used to do, you know, what we used to actually address. And it's the same thing as, I don't think you would have signed up in this event to say, you know what, I know it's really important that the food happens, so I'm just going to get involved with every part of the food. Because it has to happen. If you were asked to do that, I think with wisdom would say, you know what, this is absolutely a no-go. I'm going to go with the fact that we're just not going to have food. And, because your job was to speak, and you would have decided that, if I have to do the food, it's going to take all the energy out of me. It's going to be not awesome. And, I'm going to sacrifice the part that I'm supposed to do. That's kind of what I'm alluding to, is that oftentimes in this move towards management intense operations, we might be really lacking in the ability to address things as managers.
And you and I sat at the same table at that event, and for the discussion times at one point, and one of the things that you said on there is that, you know, kind of back to what we've already covered, but it's helpful, I think, to hear it again, is that we don't want to trade what we're called to do for what we're good at doing, right? I think is kind of the idea that you were communicating, that you know, we might be able to do something at a high level, and it's a good thing to do, but is it what God has called us at this moment to do? And I think that all, you know, that can inform all of this discussion that we're having here today. Would you agree?
I believe that, you know, if I could make emphasis on that, that is a little different vein than what we've discussed today, but I think we all can take from that to realize that as we learn about different ways to manage our ranch, different ways to run our ranch, different better ways to do that, don't just, you know, look at that and say, oh, well, this is better, or this is a good way to do something. If you are not, as you just said, if it's not a calling, if it's not where you should go, if it isn't the right direction, don't trade it just because, hey, it's going to make you a little bit more money, or it's going to save you a little bit more time, or, you know, when you kind of go down the list, keep it in perspective with your large overarching goals of where you want to be as a human being, at where you want to be in terms of the kingdom of God, where you want to be with your operation 50 years from now. Don't just sacrifice, oh, well, this is an efficient thing to do right now. This is a good thing to do right now. That's, we can always compromise short-term decisions with a long-term approach, you know, with, you know, when it comes to important stuff like people, as we would all agree, those are more long-term things.
Yeah. Well, let me just apply it directly to ranching. I think John Maxwell said that if you are aware of a need and you have the ability to meet the need, that constitutes your calling, right? And so let's just apply that to ranching when we talk about this, what you're called to do and what is a good thing to do, and that distinction. Let's say you've got four kids under the age of 10 years old, which I've been there before. But you also know that moving your cows four times a day is better than moving them once a day for the land. It's a good thing to do for the land. But do you have the ability to do that and to raise your family well? Probably not. So because it's a good thing to do, but you don't have the ability to do it, right now you're not called to do it. Maybe when you're retired, you're called to do that, but now you're not, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah, 100% in what you're saying there. That's a great way to distill down some decision making, and to be okay with that. You know, to understand that we could do that right now, or we could take that direction right now, but whoever's the decision-making team, we will not, because. And so there you're defining your values, you're defining what's important, And the other thing about that is that it does open up your ability to make good decisions, because then if you get those, that decision out in front of you, you might be able to find a creative way to navigate how to come very close to the, you know, to the grazing solution, or the, you know, if it's the soil health solution, or if it's other, you might be able to navigate some other solutions to accomplish the same thing, because you've clarified the reasons why you are not doing it. You know, you didn't hide behind the reasons when you stated the reasons why you were going to move forward in a manner that you were, if that makes sense. Yeah. You said that your family was more important in this decision. So therefore everybody around you, including yourself, and I say including yourself because sometimes we're confused as to why we're making decisions, because we haven't ironed out what are the driving values in making our decisions. But then when you iron them out, then all of a sudden some new decisions, some new opportunities actually unfold in front of you. They truly do. Once you can be honest with yourself.
Yeah. No, we're speaking the same language. I appreciate it. It's good.
Yeah.
It's real good. Yeah. So I'm going to tell a story, and this story is going to make me sound like a horrible person, but I'm okay with that, because Jeremiah 17:9 says the heart is desperately wicked and evil above all things, who can know it? And this is a recent story. It just happened like a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. So I got focused on this event that we were putting on with South Dakota and Wyoming Farm Bureau Young Farmers and Ranchers Committees in Deadwood. And Steve Kenyon was coming down to speak at that event. But before that, he was speaking at the South Dakota Soil Health Coalition. So I figured, hey, let's save some money, save some airfare or whatever. I'll just drive to Aberdeen, South Dakota. I don't know what that is, 5 hours from my house, and pick him up. Sure. And then I'll drive him back to the conference in Deadwood that weekend. What I forgot, I got hyper-focused, and we're coming back to something you said way back at the beginning of this episode. I got hyper-focused on that, and what I forgot was to make sure that my wife was free to come along with me to the event that she was a part of the committee that planned it, right? And so she ended up feeling like she had to stay home and take care of things, but she didn't say that, right? But she just did it because she's a good stock person. Like I said, she's a good stock woman. She takes care of her animals and she did it. And then, you know, we got home and it wasn't 10 minutes after I dropped off Steve Kenyon at his hotel on the way home from the event. I dropped him off and I started driving home that night. And now that I wasn't hyper-focused on my to-do list for that event anymore, it became very, very obvious to me that I had neglected my responsibilities at home, and that my wife was, you know, essentially stuck at home because of that. And so how do you avoid hyper-focus, or have you found some tools that have been helpful for you to avoid hyper-focus? And I've repented to my wife with tears, by the way. So we've gotten to that point. But how do you avoid hyperfocus? What do you have, any tips, tricks, ideas that would maybe help me in the future not to get hyperfocused?
I love it. You know I think that everybody that's listening, you know, if they haven't already turned it off because they've been bored listening to my side of the conversation, you know, I think they need to realize that all of us need to figure out better ways of not making those mistakes. You know, all of us have, you know, when you're doing an interview like this, or maybe you read an article, or you see some people that are being successful in their ranching or whatever you're looking for, you're looking at people, oh, wow, those are people that are being successful. We're not also at that same time, you know, having them list off, you know, and how's the carnage in the rest of your life going right now because you're successful in this area. Okay, we don't ask that question, and so therefore, we all assume that they're balancing it very well. I mean, it's just an assumption because there's no question being asked about that. You know, it's like they obviously must be going well. oh, well, I don't know if it's going well. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. But at least this area seems to be something that's noteworthy. So we're going to ask people questions and you know, respect their answers because they're obviously a leader in this area. So I'm going to assume right away that there's a lot of folks that don't know how to handle the question of, you know, hey, how are you overcoming, you know, mistakes of hyperfocus? I think that for me, the only answer I can think of, you know, as of recently that's been very powerful is to realize that, you know, it's very much like the scripture of someone says you can gain the whole world and lose your soul. Mm. To think of that scripture and how it combines with, if you can add, this is the statement that I've made to myself, if I can add to my income or change my vocation in a manner that, you know, there's increase, you know, there's some increased profitability or something of that nature, but it doesn't take away from my ability to relate to my family, be a good father, be a good husband. How can I do that? If every time I add something to my plate, if it's subtracting from that other area, like, whoa, Shane, you know, hit the brakes here. Think about it. Like, why are you signing up for that then? Is it taking away from the other areas that I'm perhaps already not doing a great job at? I mean, already not getting, you know, above a B plus in terms of, let's say, how I relate to my kids or spending time with my wife or spending time with, you know, how many family vacations have I actually been able to put together? And the reason I haven't is I basically have always said perhaps because I'm too busy. Well, how long can you do that? You know, how long can you actually legitimately say that you haven't had time to actually spend the time or the, you know, invest in the relationships that's really that important? So that would be just a one answer is to say, you know, kind of a vision statement in my own life is to say, does adding this task subtract from those other important relationships? You know, is there a mathematical relationship that's not healthy? Or is there a way to actually add this into my life without subtracting? And to me, that's when I think of the word that comes to my mind is scalability. Sometimes you can add activities or tasks by way of delegation or by way of like outsourcing, and you're not the central figure. To try to bounce it back so it doesn't get too obtuse or indistinguishable to the original question, there might have been a way for you to accomplish the task of getting your speaker back and forth without you actually doing it. Because basically, you know, you were out of the picture. You were out of there. Maybe that wasn't the situation, but there might've been ways for that to actually happen. But you had to dedicate 100% of your time and your life during that time frame. And so that should be a red flag right away, that if you have to be 100% committed, then that's a big deal, you know, because you typically are a big player in your own life in terms, especially by way of relationships. Mm, mm,
mm. Yeah. Very good. So I think that you and I could talk about this for a long time, but we've both got responsibilities that we should attend to. And it would be really the height of hypocrisy to talk longer about it and neglect responsibilities, right? So
yes, that would be. And you've been so gracious. I hope that in some of the long-winded responses that there's been some wisdom that some folks can glean in that, you know. Yeah. And I think your attempt to put people back into the equation is so necessary. You know, that's the one thing that I think you're trying to flesh out here is how do we do a better job of not sacrificing very important people around us, very important relationships around us in the midst of attempting to be successful in the agriculture arena. And I think that whether or not you gain any wisdom from my words, I think that attempt needs to be at the front of us so that we don't sacrifice them in the journey.
Yep. And I think kind of where I was going is in wrapping up is that something again that you said early on about, you know, God didn't make us with headlamps, right? And we don't, I think that we have steeped so long in the culture, in the water of our culture, that we don't recognize the ways that it's impacted us. And I think that it, in one small way that it's impacted us, is the fact that the light bulb has been invented in the last, what, 200 years, right? And so it's pretty new in human history to have a light bulb that allows you to be productive into the wee hours of the morning. And I think that we should, before we just fully endorse that behavior, we should sit down and think about the impacts of it. And sit down and think about the impacts that it has on us and our family and all of those things. Because as you said, also we're designed for work and rest, and we probably would benefit from following some of the longer day and shorter day patterns that exist in our world, and we would probably benefit as human beings who were designed to live in this world from allowing those kind of rhythms to dictate some of the way that we approach our work. And that's not something I'm doing necessarily. I'm just thinking this conversation has brought that to mind, that maybe there's some wisdom in following. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to be dark in my house at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in December because right. I've got all my lights shut off, but I'm just saying that at least that that should cause us to question some of the things that we're doing, and those things that we've never even thought about maybe should be thought about a little bit more.
I think Clay, I think that if someone has made it all the way through this podcast and they've been trying to glean some information, I think they typically take some short catchphrases that resonate. And I think I've cast in many ways somewhat of a negative tone of like, don't fall into this pitfall. Don't, you know, these are some things that you can make mistakes. As you say that, I really want to leave, you know, one tidbit of wisdom that I really, really appreciate. I guess I think I came up with it myself. It doesn't matter if I did. But one thing that I really enjoyed about management intensive grazing, about what I call string farming, but actually grass farming, is this reality that one, you get really connected with your ranch, the soil, the cattle, so much more. So if anybody's on the edge of like, they're still wondering, hey, am I ever going to actually move into this? I really did have a lot more love for this type of operation than conventional agriculture. But the one aspect from a workload that I thought was so refreshing, very similar to what your wife says, hey, we have all day to get these cattle moved, is to realize this fundamental principle that I think is true. In the midst of the battle of the crazy, of the trying to get work done, when it gets dark, your work is done. Mm. And the reason that is because cattle, especially a cattle around temporary fencing, they stop moving. Okay. They're done. They're not going anywhere, regardless of how big of a disaster that you have created. They're pretty much going to sit tight because it's time for them to go to bed. They're going to try to eat and then they're going to try to lay down. They're not interested in trying to range across the whole country in the darkness. And then it's only incumbent upon you then is that you must get up when they get up, which will be when the sun comes up. And so as long as you're willing to get up with them, you also can go to bed when they go to bed. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And so there's a lot of comfort in that, because if you go to conventional agriculture that, you know, during harvest time or whatever, you just go, whether making hay, combining, harvest, that kind of thing. Like you just don't stop. And so anyway, I want to just really encourage people to realize that that's one of the positives in terms of how your life can be more sane if you switch away from what I would consider conventional agriculture and embrace that reality that, you know, you only have to work the hours that the cattle are awake. If that makes sense, to summarize it. That's the only hours that you really are obligated to be out there laboring.
Yeah.
So I think that's a blessing in terms of trying to take some of the crazy and reduce some of the pressures and realize that's all that's called upon you as you embrace moving cattle, whatever grazing plan you might have.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, the worst thing that's going to happen if you've got good exterior fences is they're going to get to a paddock that you didn't plan for them to be at a little earlier and take a few bites before you put them back where you want them.
Yep, yep. I mean, when, if you make enough mistakes, the cattle will move themselves.
Yeah. So, yeah. So Shane, I would be remiss if I didn't, if I took an hour of your time today and didn't allow you to talk a little bit about what you've got going on from a business perspective, some of the things that you guys are doing there at Barber Industries and some of those things. Specifically as it relates to grazing, but other things too, if you feel it's relevant.
Thank you. Thank you. Again, thank you all for listening this long. You guys really are, you have either been able to multitask through some of my monologues, or otherwise you have, you just didn't want to change the station or something. So thank you for listening this long. We've got a lot going on, a lot. I've shifted more to, retail or sales, based income out here. Meaning that's the core of my operation as it relates to my agriculture customers. I sell, most people actually just call them chicken waters for cows. I think it's fun. One guy calls them turkey waters for cows. I love it when he calls them turkey waters. So they're just large mobile water storage drinkers. They're called storage drinkers. You can find me on Facebook, Barber Industries LLC. I think my marketing is best described as covert. I try to hide my stuff as much as possible, so people have to seek me out, which is just means that I haven't done a good job of marketing at all. We sold literally last year. We sold three times as many as my best year, so we sold about 120 of those units. It was just more than I've ever been able to do in the past. And again, that kind of goes back to scalability. I'm not doing all the work by any means. Mostly it was a scramble last year to just get the product to customers, regardless of whether or not it had much to do with profitability. I wanted to make sure the customers had a product. Sometimes it wasn't even the exact product they wanted, but some similar products so they could actually keep grazing and use leased pastures or rented pastures or some grass that opened up, places that had dried up and they didn't have another source of water. So I have three products now, three standard products, a 2,300 gallon, a 1,400 gallon, and then we've got a brand new just this year product that's called the Bullfrog 1000. So that's a 1000 gallon model. This is more for people that have less than 100 head of cattle to a herd. It has a lamb cover on the waterer, so it'd be great for sheep as well. And it was intended to keep trying to shave some dollars out when steel went through the roof. It also super excited about that because I've teamed up with Metalark out there, those guys that sell the tank toad. So this is a satellite or cellular based water monitoring system. So just a fantastic product. And the reason why it's fantastic is there's a number of water monitoring solutions out there. Like there's plenty of those that you can find, but it is the most dirt simple, in terms of what the engineers would call the back end, meaning that you hook it up and it starts texting you and that's it. Like that's, you do nothing. Like if you want to do something, that's fine. But otherwise it's automatically checking the water for you, giving you the minimal amount of information. It's not overloading you with information, but it's giving you exactly what you want. And if you ask it for more information, it will give it to you, but it's just perfect because I know we all struggle with another app, another whatever, because most of my customers are not 20, 30, 40 year old ag people. Most of them are still 50, 60, 70 year old people who just want the water checked. And, so those tie, the reason why that's really special is we've got that built so it brackets right up to any of my products, but we specifically got a mount for the Bullfrog. So that moves with your herd. So now you've got a water tank that the calves can all get a drink at and somebody to check the water for free because you don't have to pay somebody. Super excited about that. So that's the water tank business. Of course, I still build custom water storage. We're about 20 weeks out on that. So way busier than I want to be in the custom. So just building custom tanks, custom steel tanks. I sell black poly pipe, so we're basically a direct distributor of that here in this Rapid City area. They manufacture it in Rapid City. Anybody wants a job, please come down and start building pipe. They need more employees there because we are about 20 weeks out on pipe. So if anybody has got a pipeline project, with disregard to whether or not you're going to buy it from me. Please don't take it as a sales pitch that you have to buy it from me, but realize if you have projects this summer that you're going to put some, any kind of pipe in the ground, get on the phone, start talking to your local contractor, start talking to your local supplier, try to get that procured, because I think you may run into some challenges this year if you're trying to get it in this year. So I sell that. I sell as reseller of freestanding panels. So I sell freight intensive products to ag customers. I also have a freight company that we got our authority because we were struggling with freight this last year, for everything I do, whether it was a steel to build my tanks or black poly pipe or being able to deliver my tanks. So we are official in terms of, you know, trucking company, but it's mainly to augment my ag products. And so from the ag side, that's what we're doing right now. And, I'm really just grateful for my customers. So I'm grateful to the Lord for it being a good year last year and to see a lot of these things mature. And, you know, my customers continue to come back for more product, and, we're looking forward to another year. Actually, I mean, very tentative. You know, these times are very concerning for all of us, as we ramp up to another year in terms of finances and fuel and inflation, et cetera. But, we're looking forward to another big year of ag, mainly ag water stuff.
Yeah. And as I said, show notes page for today, workingcows.net/237. And actually the day that I went down and picked up those panels from you all those months ago, now probably over a year ago, mm-hmm. we stood there in front of one of those waters and made a video, together. And you kind of did a walk around of it and talked about what those waters do and how they work. And you had the bigger and the smaller version there. Do they both still, or do all three versions still bracket up to a skid steer or a bale bed pickup?
The answer is yes. So if you have a skid steer, this will be the simplest attachment you've ever seen. It's basic. You can basically consider this a skid steer attachment. Mm-hmm. Take off everything and clip into it. The two larger models do. The Bullfrog does not, because it's small enough that if you have a set of forks for your skid steer, you're just going to fork it and grab it because it's smaller. So you just no reason to even add that cost to it. And then the two smaller units, the 1400 gallon and the 1000 gallon, they both have hydro bed or bale bed, ears. I call them ears on them.
Sure.
And then we also came out this year, for the two larger models. We did get, finally got around to a John Deere 740 attachment. So mm-hmm. for anybody that really fell in love with a John Deere 740 loader, then we have that designed. We'd love to have a couple more. We've done 3-point attachments in the past. I just haven't standardized that yet. So always some more designs in the works that we would like to have finalized, but I also don't want to turn out something. It takes a while to get something designed, prototype it, test it, and then go through the actual final design. That's not just like, you know, it does take a while to get that part done. And I like to have it right. I don't want to sell something that, is just halfway or just doesn't, you know, it's kind of works. And so those are, to answer your question, yeah, that's what we got. So very mobile. If you've got a tractor, if you've got a skid steer, if you've got a hydro bed, if you just want to actually drag the unit around with a side-by-side or a pickup, the 1000 is going to work great for a side-by-side. I have a lot of customers that will drag the unit. I don't think there's a bit of problem with the 1400 gallon. And I do have people that drag the 2300 as well, but it's not my first choice, mainly just because you're going to be smashing a lot of grass down. And that seems like it's kind of counterproductive to what everybody was trying to accomplish.
Sure.
And so yes, thanks for the question. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. As I said, links to all that, including the video and his Facebook page, will be in the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/237. Shane, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Clay. So much fun. Appreciate you, bud.
Ranching demands well-built equipment. Kubota equipment that's built right, built ready, and proven for over a century. Tractors that are adaptable and versatile. Hay tools backed by a 2-year warranty. Sidekick utility vehicles where durability meets speed, and productive SSV skid steers. There's ranch work to do. Kubota equipment is ready to get it done right. Learn more at KubotaUSA.com.
Very good stuff there with Shane. Really appreciate his perspective and his willingness to come and share it. Really looking forward to next week on the Working Cows podcast. Gonna share an episode with you another episode about really what's truly regenerative about regenerative agriculture is its ability to positively impact families and positively keep families connected to the land. Really looking forward to sharing my conversation with Scott Houck with you next week, and we'll see you again real soon on the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.